Hello and welcome to Untold. We are back for another episode. I'm really excited. I've got a friend of mine on today, a chap called David Wood, who runs the Liana Collection. We interesting story, which I'm sure we'll come on to. We actually shared an office space together initially, and I think I was too messy. He decided that enough was enough. David has built a really impressive drinks distribution business. He's gone from starting the brand with zero investment to winning Drinks Distributor of the Year award this year. It's a pleasure, an honour. He's a good friend of mine. We've shared many a pint together. And it's great that he's now on the show. David, how are you doing?
Hi, Harry. How are you, mate?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure, pleasure. And we are in the deep, dark depths of East London recording this.
I know. We are both so far from home.
Yeah, I know. I think I was joking with Chloe that I needed to bring my passport to come across. But there we go. And I want to bring some colour. What we always do to give listeners a bit of colour to start with here is just talk about give them and me a bit of a flavour about you. What makes you tick? Where the business was born? How it was started? Your career in the drinks industry? In a certain nutshell, like bring us up to speed to where we are with today.
Yeah, great. I guess for me, I look back on when I started making decisions about, you know, kind of career and your life and what you're going to dedicate yourself to. And I was thinking about it today when I was like prepping for the podcast. I remember being at school and having this kind of careers session with my form tutor. And I went through the A-levels I was going to do, which I won't mention on here. And he kind of laid out what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And I was just so uninspired. Like, oh my goodness me.
Yeah.
And I do remember at that point thinking like, whatever life comes, however life comes, I'm always going to make decisions to do things I enjoy doing. And if that takes me to making a load of money, great. If it takes me to being really happy, great. But one thing it won't do is give me a kind of a boring life. I really kind of made that decision quite early on. And looking at the kind of how I've got, you know, how we've both kind of landed, you know, here today, you know, we both clearly love what we do, and you know, every day, however frustrating and stressful it can be, it is a lot of fun. If I look back on how it kind of started, I didn't have a job until I was probably like 25. I was kind of floating around trying to play cricket professionally, and anyone that knows me knows I was never going to be good enough to do that. Good excuse to go and travel Australia.
You are incredible at cricket though. Like
stick cricket. Excellent. And one of my mates one day called me, a mutual friend of ours, Fraser, and he said, look, I've got a job in recruitment at my office in London. Do you want to come down? And it was a job recruiting for the drinks industry. And I didn't know anything about the drinks industry. Actually recruiting for FMCG. I had absolutely no idea what that meant.
Yeah.
but my specific job was to, you know, recruit in the drinks industry. So I used to kind of have these, my job was obviously find businesses that are looking at kind of mid-level management, sales and marketing roles, for companies like Innocent Smoothie and Fever Tree at the time, and some really incredible challenger brands. And this was, not to show my age too much, but this was before this kind of explosion of brands that we've seen in the last 10 years or so. And my job was to interview people that were running around, you know, bars and restaurants, trying to get brands listed, telling the stories of these brands.
Yeah.
And I found it like absolutely fascinating. I always have found brand and story and somebody that's able to carve a career by creating something just like you guys do, and being able to make a career out of that. I've always and still do find it fascinating.
Yeah.
Anyway, one day this the phone rings, and it's a gin brand called Martin Miller's, which is run by he is a friend of mine still. His name's Jacob, and he is pretty nuts. And he said, look, I'm looking for a sales manager to look after London. And can you bring me three CVs tomorrow afternoon? So I went to his office, and I was just thinking, that is That sounds like a lot of fun. So I got found these two CVs. One of them had been retired for about 5 years, and one of them was kind of pretty unemployable, to be honest. And I showed him the CVs. He just said, you know, he was furious. And I said, well, there is a third candidate. It's me. I'd love to take the job. So that's how I started. I was off on holiday the next day, and he rang up my boss and said, can you tell David he's got the job? And Emma, so who was my boss at the time, was just like, obviously, you know, he doesn't know how it works. So she came in and said, he's going to offer the person the job. He's the candidate. And then obviously got a bit awkward at that point.
That's amazing.
Kind of got into it. And I was right at the beginning of the boom in gin and tonics, and using my kind of skills in recruitment and from my, you know, connections at Fevertree, I helped get a few of my mates into the drinks industry as well.
Yeah.
Who had joined, you know, the perfect brand at the perfect time.
And yeah,
it, you know, Charlie, who's one of my best mates, who's now working at the Liana Collection, one of my best mates, Henry, my great friend James, who's now the commercial director of Fevertree. You know, we joined this weird industry that had very, very few competitors.
Yeah.
In an absolutely booming market at the time. It was not only a lot of fun, it was, you know, talk about spending money on business school and educating yourself into how business works. Like that was such a lucky period of time, because you were able to learn, you know, how brands distribute, how to grow a brand,
yeah,
the impact of a growth and a trend in a consumer.
Yeah.
Anyway, after that, I moved to be the head of sales for Camden Town Brewery.
Amazing.
And about 6 months into that, Jasper, the founder of Camden, called us down into the brewery and said, you know, we've just gone into business with AB InBev. I've just sold the business. You know, he'd been casual for pretty casual. Yeah. He's 5 years in, he was about 40 years old, and he had about 85 million quid in his back pocket. It was really inspiring. But my passion was about growing brands, and I didn't have an interest in, you know, going to join AB. I was all about that excitement and growth, and that's what I still absolutely love about businesses. And then after that, I went to Aspel Cider, which is one of the oldest, it's the second oldest family run drinks business in the UK after Berry Brothers and Rudd.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, I can learn so much here. Cider and premiumization was really booming at this time. You know, the supermarkets in drinks had started to list a whole host of interesting brands. The consumer was really starting to move away from Diageo-owned brands or Heineken-owned brands, you know, really understanding the stories and sustainable messaging and, you know, just generally getting into a whole host of different categories.
Yeah.
And about a year and a half in, they sold... like seven generations, 400 years old.
It's your touch, surely.
And I was like, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm good at this. I just thought at that time, you know, the chairman at the time said to us all, you know, go and have 6 months full pay to go and find more jobs. And I was talking to you at the time about, you know, you were talking about starting a kind of, you know, a challenger brand and a savory snacking brand. You're pretty clear on that. And I remember the chats we used to have, and I've always had that kind of entrepreneurial, you know, desire. My dad was a businessman, and I've always been interested in it. And I just thought, like, what better time to really launch than right now?
Yeah.
And in those three businesses, in gin, in craft beer, and in craft cider, what I was starting to see in all of my meetings was across the back bar in all categories was a need for premiumization and a need for interesting and challenger brands. And just honestly, at that time, it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do was like use that network to help bring in interesting, smaller, niche, sustainable drinks brands that I could really believe in.
Yeah.
And I knew that buyers would be really interested in.
Yeah.
And the whole idea was I would pop up, have a meeting with you as your kind of sales agent for these brands. And when you sat down with me, you wouldn't have to talk about gin. You wouldn't have to talk about whiskey. You wouldn't have to talk about, you know, rums. It was all about interesting categories that are essential for great drinks and for your bar, but that weren't going to get in the way of the trading agreements that a buyer might already have with Diageo.
Yeah, amazing.
And the way the drinks industry works is when you launch a bar, which is a kind of a macro example, the bar needs house gin, house whiskey, it needs a beer, it needs a house lager, and then pretty much all of the other categories aren't signed into a Diageo contract. And that's where the bartender and, you know, the publican and the, you know, maybe the shop owner, that's where their creativity kind of comes from, is that mm-hmm. little space there. You mm-hmm. know, most of the people that run bars hate Diageo. They would, I hate Diageo. They pay you a lot.
It's a necessary
But then
evil.
When they, if somebody was able to offer them some beautiful, interesting brands that, you know, could complement the their drinks menu, it just felt like quite a sensible thing to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of how it started, really.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
Started, you know, found, I actually started with my Hotmail, which looking back is pretty funny. I looked back for a few emails this week. My Hotmail was called coatsmatebono@hotmail.com, which is a joke from school. And somehow my first two clients responded to that email.
That's amazing.
And that's how it kind of all started.
That's amazing. I love it. And I think there's so much to unpick in there. I think the where I want to go to start with is that experience that you had at the helm of some other great founders. And I had similar working for Causton Press, where there was a management team in place. I mean, I think there's no substitute for cutting your teeth and really understanding, to your point when you said around trends and growth and et cetera, like, obviously you've always had an innate passion and a belief that you're going to do something yourself. When you were there, were you fully there? Did you enjoy it?
100%. You know, I think when I got to Aspel, you know, at that point I was about 5 years into my career, and that's generally about the time where people start to get the itch.
Yeah.
But during the time, I think the most inspiring working kind of, you know, brand and culture I was part of was Camden Town Brewery. I think there were so many elements to the success of that business that were not lucky. And there was a couple of elements that was luck, you know.
Yeah.
The main one being that craft beer was a, you know, a booming industry and a really growing industry.
Yeah.
But really the genius of the business was Jasper. If anyone's ever met Jasper, he's probably calmed down now, but he was a pretty contentious, like challenging character. And he was at times really, really difficult to work for, and he could upset a lot of people. He was unashamedly, you know, driven and passionate to a fault. You know, I didn't love working for him, if I'm honest, at times.
Yeah.
But his ability to get the job done and to know how far to push someone and something to get the job done was, you know, what ultimately led to his success.
Yeah.
The other thing that he had was an incredible ability to understand brand, and anyone that knows the Camden Town brand and really studies it, you know, one thing that did help Jasper is his father-in-law was Sir John Hegarty, part of BBH, world's most famous ad agency.
Yeah.
Who was obviously probably quite a good guy to help on brand and developing.
Yeah.
But what was really cool about that business was it was about great beer, not craft beer.
Yeah.
So, you know, the beer that could be taking Heineken out of the fridges across the whole world because of its quality. And Jasper did a good job of never talking about craft.
Yeah.
Because at that point, there's a perception of super expensive or small, lack of clarity and consistency.
Yeah. That's so interesting, actually. I'd never really thought about that, because you listen to everyone just going craft. You've seen that's a trend that people jump on, and actually you're so right. The craft element is that niche and slightly smaller, and kind of you're maybe in a backyard somewhere making it yourself, and actually the what it's really about is the liquid, right? And how nice it is.
I think so. I think it's something that the genius of that is that he looked into the future, which is something that's whenever we talk to our brands in our portfolios, never look at the short term. Look deep into the future.
Yeah.
What your success is going to look like in the future.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was true about Camden is that their ambition was to grow a big business and a global business, and categorizing yourself as craft in the early days is really going to come back to bite you in the future when you get listed in Tesco's. And it's something, you know, arguably BrewDog are having to challenge, you know, that's a challenge they must have to deal with on a daily basis. Definitely. Like, challenging independence and craft, you know, how do you go about messaging that and packaging that up when you're a globally distributed brand that owns lots of, you know, real estate and hotels and, you know, you're nationally distributed into basically every single major multiple, you know, it's a challenge. And that was something that was really clever. And,
I guess the balance in everything, like my mind that immediately goes to the conversation I had with my wife, Sophie, a couple of weeks ago, where we're now at the phase where like little ones here and we're like, what does our next sort of 5 years look like? And we're almost putting that 5-year plan in place because we're like, if we don't do that, we won't know where the hell we're going to end up. And you kind of have to start doing it. I mean, that's on a completely different level, right? But I think you also need to, it must be that finding that fine balance, and we'll come on to like how you do it at Liana Collection, but that fine balance of like what's going to happen in the future, but also naturally letting things take its course. So the key decisions like, is it craft for Camden Town? At The Savourist, we can't run our own podcast and not talk about our wonderful snacks. We have a range of crunchets which are made from edamame, black bean, puff rice. They're bundled together and seasoned with Thai chili or sizzling barbecue. They pack a punch of crunch and are honestly the go-to snack that you should be heading for in your cupboard. They're high protein, they're low calorie, and our mission is to end the healthy, tasty tension. It says it all, really. Healthy snacks that taste absolutely banging. Head on over to our website and grab some. Ta-da! I want to come on to sort of the core of why we exist, Untold, and and just to sort of anyone's listening that hasn't listened to Untold before, the reason why this exists is when we first launched The Savourist, we launched the Savoury Snack Bar, which we now don't do anymore. Mm. But we got a listing in Sainsbury's, and it was like the 20th store visit. Chloe, bless her, who's also sat in here, joined. And I think it was around Christmas time. We were both fucking driving around Sainsbury's stores, like car park after car park, going in, doing compliance and checking we were on a shelf. I think there were many times where we'd sell it to Sainsbury's for X, I'd spend X amount of fuel and then buy it back for double the price just to prop the rate of sell up. And I was sat in the car park and I was like, this is so shit. Like, why is nobody taught? You look at LinkedIn, you look at social media, and you think that founders and business owners and people that are building brands are fucking like superheroes, and they've all got this amazing. And it's like it's all just an act. Like behind it, there's an element of realism. So, what we want to bring here is the tougher times, the harder times, the times that have affected founders' mental health, in order to give listeners a bit of a toolkit and a bit more of a well, if David runs a successful business that's just an award-winning business and he struggled with stuff, when I'm struggling with stuff, I can also go through it. Do you know what I mean? It brings open that realism. So I want to delve into that side. Talk me through. I mean, we had a chat pre-recording this so that we can get an idea of where this conversation goes. Talk me through that. Talk me through the tougher times that have now become a driving force in why you do what you do.
Yeah, cool. I think firstly, like this kind of last 6 months or so has been a really reflective time for me.
Yeah.
I think winning the award this last month or so, if I'm honest, really gave us a first time in my whole, you know, in the history of the Liana Collection, I was able to like reflect back on kind of what it is, you know, I've kind of built from scratch. Yeah. And it was the first running a business is so unbelievably stressful. I mean, the stress way outweighs the good times.
Yeah.
But the good times are worth it. You know,
Yeah.
And as you get more experience and you get a bit longer in the tooth and this business lasts for longer and is more mature, that managing the stress piece becomes easier. And it kind of let, you know, when we discussed about the podcast, it allowed me to reflect as well on, you know, not just the Liana Collection, but, you know, you and I as well. And I think a couple of weeks ago, I was on an EasyJet flight and I sat down in my seat and the lady, the air hostess came over and said, do you want a snack? So I just picked up the brochure, opened it up, and there were three options. You know, there was the green Pringles, which I think sour cream and chai. Yeah. The red one, I'm still not sure exactly what that one is. And below that was this like massively punchy picture of Crunchits. And below that was a big banner advertising your brand. And I was just like, I was just totally stunned. I knew they were there. Like, I already had my phone out to take a photo. And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, fucking hell, aged. How did you do this? Because I started looking back on those days, you know, those early days when we shared it wasn't an office, it was like a porter cabin in a car park in Fulham.
It was really dodgy.
If you turn the tap on, it just went outside.
It didn't work. whenever I say oh, I used to share an office with Woodsy, and it was in Fulham. Everyone's always like, "Ooh, la-di-da," and I'm like, "I promise you, it was like the furthest thing from la-di-da you could get."
There are a lot of stories we can say about that office, but I remember one in the very early days. You had your first kind of batch of samples, and you passed me one. And at the time, it was when you'd first launched the bars with a, you know, a manufacturer you're not using anymore.
No, yeah.
And I opened up the packet, and do you remember it was like there was an outer packet, and then inside was like a film.
That was a little maggot. I remember.
There was a maggot.
It was called maggot.
I was like, Harry, like, you know, this is just a trial run, and you were like sheepishly nodding in the background, and I looked behind you, and there was about 1,000 boxes. And I just remember thinking at that point, you know, it's really, really cool to have, you know, got from one point in your career to completely changing the product and just be absolutely smashing it. So,
God bless you, mate.
You know, gone through that together and, you know, seeing the challenges, which people just don't talk about. I was just thinking at that point, it must be so easy for people to look at that page and just think, God, Harry's smashing it. You know, it's just Harry and Chloe together just have nailed it. It must be making loads of money. They've made it. There's no issues now. And it's not the case, you know, it's a real challenge. 100%. And I guess for me, you know, Liana Collection, when I first started, it was completely focused on the on-trade. So bars and restaurants. And in March the 15th in 2020, I purchased the most amount of Calvados, probably the biggest order of Calvados that the UK has ever seen, because one of our brands had just got this amazing listing. And 10 days later, it was a pub group, 10 days later, obviously the doors shut on bars and restaurants. And I just poured like my entire savings from the Liana Collection had built up to this point to be able to start buying and selling stock.
Yeah.
And I'd put it all into this Calvados. And it absolutely decimated the business. At the time, there were four of us working in the company. And I couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
You know, at the time it meant so much to me to have to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
And I had people responsible, I was responsible for, there's obviously staff in the company, and I just felt at that moment, you know, this has got to survive. I've got to find a way to make this survive.
Yeah.
And over the next kind of 3 months internally, we made this, this thing called Liana Cocktail Company, which you'll obviously remember, which was...
I do, yeah.
The idea was you could take our niche cocktail brands that should be in the on-trade, and you would have them packaged up into these kind of eco pouches, into Negronis, Manhattans, really consumer-friendly cocktails. You could then use a QR code to see how the cocktails are made, hear the stories of the founders, and... You know, we poured absolutely everything into this weird little kind of thing, which kept the lights on. We sold like loads of units. We raised a load of money for the Drinks Trust, the hospitality charity. And most importantly, no one in the Liana Collection lost their job.
Amazing.
And it was awesome. And I think, you know, when I look back on the Liana Collection, whatever happens to it in the future, those days where we just threw our whole kind of lives into it, or I did especially,
yeah,
it kept the business alive. It allowed us to learn lessons that we now incorporate into our day-to-day, made me stop, much like Jasper had done, I'm sure, when he started Camden, and start thinking about what the long term, you know, picture is for Liana.
Yeah.
And gave us real credibility in, you know, in our own ability to be able to make the company last.
Yeah.
One of the things that is true with Liana, and with me especially, is when honestly, I was younger, I lost my mum, and at the time I hadn't really done anything with my life. I was 20 and I was, like I said, unemployed, trying to be a cricketer, traveling to Australia, you know, trying to just not jump into work. And I was pretty lazy and, you know, quite an arrogant young kid. And I think when it happened, and when COVID did hit, and it started to get taken away from me, I think I started to associate her with the business.
Yeah.
And I think that wasn't obvious to me until, you know, maybe 12 months later, when, you know, Brexit then came, and we got through that tough period.
Yeah.
And I was able to kind of reflect back on, you know, the amount of mental anguish that had gone into making sure this fucking business didn't die, when maybe the better option would have been to maybe lay it dormant and allow time to pass, find something else to do. And for a long time, it took me a while to understand why I was feeling the way I was.
Yeah.
And coming out of COVID should have been a celebration. And for me, a lot of the time, I'd really struggle with it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm so glad I've been through it. And I'm sure if my family and my wife would tell you the same, you know, I was probably acting in a strange way and probably being overly positive, but, you know, associating something so personal with a business is in some ways really, really unhealthy.
Yeah.
And I think so many times people are driving their business forward, and so often they don't wonder what's really driving it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
For me, it's not about making a load of cash. It's, I think I have to accept that part of it is about trying to make my mum proud.
Yeah.
And I think over the last, you know, 12 months or so, I've really been able to accept that.
Yeah. Hi all, just quickly, I want to introduce you to my friends at Spring & Tonic PR, who are also this series podcast sponsors. They are my own trusted PR partners for the Savourists. What I love about Spring & Tonic is it's run by two wonderful ladies, Emily and Jess. They're a small but mighty team. It is just the two of them, and thanks to years in the industry, they completely understand the startup, scale-up, food and drink space, and how to get meaningful cut-through in consumer and trade media. Having worked with some of the most successful and exciting names in food and drink, they really are an industry go-to. So if you're looking to make tangible difference to your business, build your brand equity through PR, I honestly would look no further. Get in touch with them at Spring & Tonic PR to find out more. Ta! I think it's amazing, mate, and I think it's incredibly inspirational. And I think it's the fact that you have been through this journey to be able to sit here today and talk about it and understand it is unbelievable. And I think the way that pivot happened from the outside, obviously at the time, we were still sharing an office when this happened. And I saw you and the team go into like this inspirational mode of like, well, we're going to set up a cocktail company. And it was wonderful. And I think the drive, like we had a couple of other people that have been on the podcast have spoken about that drive before and what's driving it, and they can't really explain what their drive is. They haven't been through the journey that you've been through, and almost guaranteed that the drive is not as emotional as one that you're going through. But it's similar. It's you're so right. It's link. I think linking a business success to something deeper than the business success is a lot more common. Now the scale of how much that is obviously changes, but I think it's a lot more common because I think it that's why brands become successful, because they just don't stop.
Yeah.
Which is like to the outsider looking in is like, wow, that's amazing. Mm. They're just not going to stop. That's so inspirational. But it's fucking detrimental to the mental health of anyone that's running it.
Yeah.
And it's such a hard balance.
It is a hard balance. And like from my side, going through it was like the best thing that's ever happened to me, because I can accept it. You know, I no longer associate the success and the failure of, you know, of that part of my life. And like one thing that I know is that she'd be very proud of me and my brothers and my dad for getting through the period and for doing the things we've gone on to do. And in my case, you know, the Leander collection is something that's great, but it's not the be all and end all, you know? No. And I think, you know, that going through that was so, so important for me.
Yeah.
And I think being able to kind of separate the two is a really important thing, but also like connecting the two is a really cool thing as well, because you know, her main focus was to make sure her three boys were happy and successful and went on to do some really cool things, and all three of us have gone on to do that. It's been
and I guess on the flip side of that, a really lovely way when the times are hard, it's hard because the feeling of loss is there, but when times are good and it's building, I guess the feeling of connection is there as well, right?
100%, in some way. Yeah, 100%. And that really is the kind of, I think the goal is, you know, taper the really tough times and the really hard times, and don't overly associate them, but don't be afraid of those emotions as well.
Yeah,
like it's a really healthy thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of part of the reason I wanted to talk to you about it today. Like, I didn't think I was going to get so upset about it, but I am in a position now where I'm able to really talk about it and accept that what happened. And, you know, I've really, really made peace with it. And like the main thing is, you know, I'm going to continue to work super hard, and I know everyone in the company will. I think one of the things that's true about Leander is we focus on what do we do? You know, what's our purpose? You know, what's our drive? What's our end goal? Those decisions are not made, you know, they're not made around money. We're not looking for a massive, huge, stressful exit. We don't have any investors. You know, what I'm trying to create is a beautiful lifestyle for the guys, a real purpose-driven company that's not trying to, you know, jump on a super trend that's going to make a load of money in the short term.
Yeah,
it's about kind of making a really lovely environment. And you know, the award I think we won this year was when I talked to the guys on the panel afterwards. The reasons that they gave us the award, we're not the biggest. You know, it's a £22 billion pound industry. We're definitely not the biggest. but I think we're one of the most purposeful.
I mean,
for them this year, we were the most purposeful.
Amazing.
That's something I'm really proud of.
Amazing. But I mean, there's so much that goes into making Leander Collection and the way that you lead that business purposeful. It's not just coming from your drive for the business success. It's, I mean, talk us through, like, you've run a drinks trade show before, you've raised like lots and lots of money for charity, and on top of all of the culture that's come in, that, like, talk to it was Cheers the festival, wasn't it?
Yes.
Like, give our listeners a little bit more color around what that purpose is.
Yeah, so our similar to, you know, we're talking about kind of long-term, that focus of the business, like what is it we're trying to do. And, you know, we really knuckled down last year on, you know, drinks distribution is not the most sexy topic in the world. And if you kind of look at a competitor set, most of them are, you know, looking for big brands that they can make a lot of money with. And it's a quite a transactional business. But what I think we've focused on is what is our purpose? So those three things are independence.
Yeah.
Secondly is sustainability and community.
Yeah.
And working with brands that are right at the forefront of sustainability and community, the last point is the people behind the brands and the founders we work with. So each of our brands are, you know, very independent. They're all very focused on sustainability or their local community, and they're all run by, you know, incredibly inspiring people. Be that Alex and Monica from our liqueur brand Mu Yu, who are number one and number two bartenders in the whole world.
Wow.
you know, Vincent from 1340, our Calvados brand, you know, 28-year-old world leader in Calvados, knows every single producer and distillery in Normandy. Barney Butterfield, that is his real name. He owns Sanford Orchard Cider. He has created and is, you know, the leading, I think he's on the board of the Cider Parliamentary Committee. He's, you know, right at the forefront of British cider, a hugely British industry. That part of those core values are what make Liana kind of unique. And when we did Cheers, that was a celebration of those three things.
Yeah.
So it was a trade show focused on not just the Liana brands, but a whole host of other brands within the drinks industry that focus on sustainability, on independence, and the founders behind the brands. And
yeah,
we think those three messages are, you know, what makes buyers kind of more excited about working with a distribution company. And more importantly, it's something that we can really focus on.
Yeah.
And the other thing with Cheers is it was an ability to take away a commercial element.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole trade show was focused on not-for-profit, and 100% of proceeds went to the Drinks Trust, who were helping people in hospitality.
Amazing.
Specifically post-COVID with mental health. And yeah, we raised, I think it was like £10,000-£15,000 on the day.
Amazing.
No one made any money, which as a result made it less of a corporate trade show, yeah, and much more, yeah, of a community feel.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're kind of planning our next event at the moment. So I won't go too deep into the moment, but
amazing.
Yeah,
that's so, I love it because you bring such another string to your bow. Is that the right phrase? You bring another dimension to your business where the way that you talk about it, A, you clearly give a shit. And it's not just a sort of let's raise money for someone to make us look like we give a shit.
Mm.
And B, you have the personal element there where buyers want to talk to you because they're really interested in what you're doing. And that is, it must be really refreshing for buyers speaking to you and the team because they're, to your point, used to that transactional sort of like sales rep that just wants to sort of tick off the fact that he's been in to see them. But for you to know everyone and have that conversation and have the fun, bubbly personality that you do, it must be really refreshing for them. I want to give our listeners something tangible to take away in terms of your story is so amazing. I find it inspirational the entire time we were sharing an office together. And I want to give them something to take away. And what I mean by that is like when you came through this moment of realization around what this drive was for the business, what got you to the place now where you're sat talking to me and happy talking about it? Like, talk us through, like, grief is, I've never lost anyone, let alone anyone so close like that. And I don't know how to move through those stages of grief. Mm. So if we leave the grief side, I think more of the like, how did you start to separate the business from your life and look at it in a more sort of rounded, because in this phase as well, like you got married, I came to your wedding and like we had the most amazing party, and like your life is absolutely not just around the Liana collection. You've got a load of mates and a loving family, and I think for a lot of founders that come on this podcast, it's taking a step back and going like, my life isn't defined by the business.
Mm.
You're clearly in a better place with this now. How did you get to that place? What key things can we give listeners that if they're in the same situation, talk us through.
Yeah, I think like what's really important is taking time away from it. And what I was finding was I was giving more and more and more and more and kind of feeding the beast, which I'm sure everybody's guilty of,
yeah,
you know, and that if I would feel guilty if I had time away from the business, cause it would need my attention.
Yeah.
Once I separated and once I kind of came to a head and realized there was something not quite right kind of going on, it allowed me the ability to just completely step away. And I don't know if you have this or if you had this in the early days, but when I used to go on holiday, if it was like a long weekend or a week or whatever, I would start feeling really guilty about not being up answering emails or talking to my clients or whatever it might be.
Mm.
And the best piece of advice I could possibly give is if at any point, you know, you're starting to feel a certain way that's not positive, take time out of the business. Like trust the people around you, you know, give as much autonomy to those guys to be able to, you know, manage things, and go and take a couple of weeks away. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I had a 2 week period when we got back into London, post COVID, and just took 2 weeks completely on my own, doing pretty chilled stuff, not worrying about the business.
Yeah.
And being conscious about that being absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And what that allowed was time to reflect on all of those emotions I'd kind of gone through as well.
Yeah.
And then obviously another thing, was just talking about it. Like I'd realized there was something, I understood what it was. And then I just like started having open conversations about it. And that's really ultimately what helped me. And I know now moving forward, next time there's an issue, right? That's the shit thing about life. Like it delivers shit news as much as it delivers good news. And there's always something around the corner that's not going to be good. It's absolutely fine. You know, it's absolutely fine, that it is going to happen and bad things are going to happen. And being able to prioritize dealing with that and not the business for a period of time, you know, people understand. And that's really, really important.
I love it. I think it's really nice. And I think it's something that a lot of people struggle with. Like I was saying with Soph, when Livy was born, we went and did like NCT classes where you sort of go and they basically teach you how to keep the baby alive for the first few weeks. And I went there and I said to Soph, it's the most refreshing thing because you're there to talk about how you're having a baby. No one in that room knew the Saverys, knew that I run the Saverys, knew that anything to do with the Saverys. And it was honestly like, not that the Saverys is now this massive brand, it's not, but it like within my circle of friends, it's obviously what the opening conversation is always, how's the business going? How's the Saverys? And it was so light and refreshing being in a world where no one gave a shit because all they cared about was the fact that their child is going to be okay. Now they're still some of my good friends and we're becoming closer as a group and they're really good mates. And now obviously they know about the Saverys. If they haven't bought a pair, they're going to get slapped. But but at the time it was something that really opened up my mind to going, holy shit, this is all consuming.
Mm.
And you have to find those ways of taking a step back and being like, I'm Harry and I'm a father and a husband, and not just, hi, I'm Harry, founder of the Saverys.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same for you, right?
100%.
And I think there are, every single person that's come on this podcast will be guilty of doing that.
100%.
I think, but doing that is almost impossible. We had Stu from Manulife on, I'm not sure when his episode is going to air, but we recorded it and he was talking about that innate drive in him and how he's had to go through a very burnout to understand it, and how you pull back and really find that balance. And I think we were talking a lot about being present in a time, and he was saying he wishes he celebrated more, and I pulled him on it and said, like, the celebrating the point I don't think is the issue. I think it's the like you can celebrate a win, and if you're not mentally there, you could be anywhere, but you're still not celebrating a win.
So
you
can
physically be there celebrating a win, but if your head isn't like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people get guilty of being like, what I love and what I find so refreshing talking to you is you're now in that space where you go, you know what, like, this is bigger than just finding the next big thing and trying to sell it for loads of money, because you're now at a point where you're totally, I'd imagine, enjoying the ride a lot more and the journey, and like that's what life is ultimately. 100%. It's like
there's a theme that comes up in so many of your podcasts, which is like, what's the goal? And it seems to be different for everybody. And the obvious answer so often is, you know, a big exit and make a load of money. But I think post COVID, a lot of people, I can definitely speak from personal experience, is that is definitely not my goal.
Yeah.
You know, my goal is to make a profitable long-term relationship, business.
Yeah.
That's kind of goal one, you know,
yeah.
And wherever that leads us, that's going to be brilliant. But if that is our main focus, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Second to that is staying true to the, the values that I spoke about earlier on,
yeah.
what the Liana collection is all about.
Yeah.
Don't, you'll see it, 2 months time, we'll have like unicorn tears gin will come into the portfolio. sold <out. laughs> Number three is like, make sure our brand partners are getting the absolute best, you know, of what we're trying to deliver.
Yeah.
Making sure they are happy and both sides of the relationship's working.
Yeah.
Number four is like the culture within the company. You know, we've just had a new starter, Chip, who's our London sales manager. Amazing. And he's come in, and one of my best mate, Charlie's our national sales manager. And he's, along with George, who's been with the company for a couple of years, just watching the three of them come together to give Chip this incredible induction and bring him into the company and see him, you know, getting his wins and getting out there and visiting 30 people a week. And, you know, I haven't done anything. I've sat back and watched that. And
yeah, that's so good.
Chaz develop his ability and skills on, you know, managing Chip. You know, Chip's learned a billion things in a couple of weeks. He's yeah. just constantly got a smile on his face.
Amazing.
Might be fake, who knows? Yeah. and George has stepped up from Chip's role from last year. You know, that kind of culture in a company is so rewarding. And it's something I never really thought about when I started the company. It's probably the thing I enjoy most.
Is, yeah.
You know, when it's time to all be together.
Quick one, I really want to talk to you about Bread and Jam. It's the UK's biggest community of food and drink founders and proud supporters of the Untold podcast. They run workshops, talks, network events and conferences that support emerging and scaling food and drink FMCG brands. Their main event, the jewel in their crown, is the Bread and Jam Festival in London each July. It's 2 days of jam-packed peer-to-peer knowledge, sharing where you can, learning from industry icons, meeting retailers, face-to-face pitching sessions, finding industry experts who can take your business to the next level, and the network till you drop. I have been the last few years, and I honestly cannot tell you how wonderful this event is. It oozes positivity. The energy in there is electric, and I've met some wonderful people there. I've had the privilege of sharing and chairing a couple of sessions there, and the whole thing is honestly unbelievable value for the cost of the ticket. Head over to their website, Bread and Jam, and I really hope I'll see you there. We are hosting an Untold live podcast from Bread and Jam this summer at the festival, so do come along and see us. And I really, really hope you guys sign up, because I honestly cannot explain how wonderful the event is. Cheers, guys.
Culture's so key, and it's thrown around like you see it on. I remember the way I can describe like quite a big change. Right, when I was at Causton Press, I had such a great time there. I loved it, and they brought in a new senior management team. Rightly so, the business needed it. Like we were all tearing around London, it was disgraceful, some of the stuff we were doing, but the business was growing nutty. Like it just had a mind of its own, but it needed someone with a bit more experience to come in and like zip it up a little bit, put some form of process in place. And when that change happened, I remember him, the chap that came in as a managing director, a lovely guy, really good at what he does, but just different culturally, of course, because he's come in to be different. Mm. So there's no right or wrong about it. But he came in and he said, I want this place to be the coolest place to work in town. And I remember thinking then, I was like, the fact that you've just said that means in front of us means it will never be the coolest place to work in town. Because if you have to tell us, culture is what I'm telling you. I'm coming to you as an employee and going, this is the coolest place to work in town.
Yeah.
Then you're the coolest place to work in town. If you're trying to tell your staff that you want it to be the coolest place to work in town. And I was just like, that for me made so much sense, because you can't dictate a culture. You almost need to foster an environment that your team create the culture for you. And that's exactly what you've done, to your point of sitting back and seeing it.
Yeah, completely unintentionally.
but that's where like natural leadership comes from, and your cult without. I think if you had tried to do it intentionally, you would have never got the same
result. No, agreed. It's such a good point, and it's, you know, it's impossible to put your finger on what kind of creates a great culture. But
yeah.
You know, I think if you look at you guys, you know, you're very ambitious, but you're also like extremely happy in what you're doing.
And, I hope so.
You know,
I hope
so. Chloe's shaking her head. No one can. Yeah. That's what's so important is, you know, as long as you get the balance right between being ambitious and having a purpose might be.
Yeah.
And also just being good people. You know, we've all worked in environments where maybe the person at the top, you know, had their own you know, agenda, and once it's toxic, once there's one bad person in there, it's really hard to keep it.
Oh, 100%.
But I think I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier, and there was a, you know, you were talking about kind of using your gut and your gut instinct, and that's the piece for me that creates the culture is, you know, when you interview people and when you get a feel for people, you don't always know if their skill set's going to be great, but quite often you know if they're a really genuine good person that's going to work hard and kind of compliment everybody else around them.
Definitely. We've just hired someone. We're bringing someone on who's joining in May. Where are we? April? Middle of May. Mm. I'd kind of been toying with the idea whether we really need to hire this role or not. And like, should I just do it myself? And then I was like, okay, no, we really do need to hire it. Mm. But I was like, I was sort of probably a nightmare for this recruiter because like I was sort of hot and cold and did I want it? Did I not want it? And it took me a while. And then the guy who's joining us, I'd never understood people who were like, you just know from the way they shake your hand, from the way they pick up a call, you just know that they're right.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is, I've got a lot to learn because I've never had that experience where you just know. I mean, I have, like, but not in a way where it's like they say hello and you're like, fuck me, I want you to work for me. Mm. And this guy came on Zoom and both Chloe and I at the end, we like high-fived them. We're like, that's it. Call the recruiter, tell him it's done. And it was he was a sales rep for Asahi previously. He hasn't got loads of experience in food and drink. Mm. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to mind teaching you that because you are... I just can't even explain it. There was just a vibe about it where I was like, I know, I want you on the team.
Yeah.
I want you on my team sheet, and that's it. It's amazing. And actually, I mean, we could sit here talking for hours about recruitment and all that sort of stuff, but it all feeds into this culture. But so the takeaways there are pulling, making sure that as you go through this journey, it's stepping away from the business, right? It's getting some time out and it's clearing the head.
I think so. And I think in the early days of your business and the early days of scaling a company, it's almost impossible to do that, you know, and you do have to kind of, you know, make an agreement with yourself that you're going to go through what the necessities in the early days of throwing yourself in what is quite a dangerous environment, you know, emotionally it really, really, really pushes you and it has to in order for you to be successful.
Yeah.
But when you get to the point, if you get to the point that I got to, you know, the main takeaway is don't let the business, you know, dictate to you how you should be feeling.
Yeah.
Take time away.
Yeah.
Trust other people to be able to manage any jobs that come in.
I love that.
And that's a really good skill to be able to have for the rest of your life. Because if you can manage those two things and have the two sides to your personality, you're going to be a happier person, you know, for sure.
I love that. And it's so key. And I think it's like businesses are a little bit like Little Shop of Horrors. Have you seen that musical? this is my old school musical theatre roots going in. And the main character feeds his plant. And then at the end, the plant ends up eating him.
Yeah.
And it's a similar, like, you start by nurturing this business and then suddenly one day it can completely control you.
Yeah.
You have to tame it
or it's going
to
eat you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And we're going to get to points where we go to the office and it's just going to be, feed me.
I think it sets you up for the rest of your life as well. You know, I don't have kids yet, but Fix and I, you know, inevitably, or hopefully, you know, we're gonna have kids. And I think that mentality and that strength of character and that drive that you have to build and grow a company, that's only going to give you, you know, skills that you can incorporate into that. Mm. And also like separating hard-nosed business with being a much more emotional person, I think that's a really positive thing for the rest of your life as well, 100%. Because it teaches you when I started the company when I was a little bit younger, I think the business was the most and potentially like the only thing that really mattered to me in my life.
Mm.
And it's over time, it starts to like wear away at, you know, your relationships without you really realizing it's happening.
Yeah.
And the best like analogy for that is you sit down for dinner with with somebody that you, you know, a friend or a family member, and they're talking to you, and all you're thinking about is like a fucking purchase order or how am I going to deal with that problem? And that is such an unhealthy place to be.
Yeah, of course it is.
And one great skill that I think we can all learn is kind of separating business from your personal life.
Being present, right?
Being present.
And having
exactly
that,
right.
Like, I had a weekend, we've just come off that Easter break, and I had a weekend where I genuinely didn't do any work. And I took Soph and my daughter, we went to the Cotswolds with my parents. My brother and sister are away. My parents got to spend some really good quality time with their granddaughter. I got to spend some really good quality time with my parents. And I think I was saying earlier to Stu that the having a baby forces you to put stuff down because you physically, you can't hold them and do something else that need your attention all the time. And for me, we probably got to the point where that's the only time where I've been present in the last 20 years because you physically can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Now that's probably not driven by drive. It's probably driven by the ridiculous ADHD that I have, which like doesn't allow me to sit still for longer than 10 seconds, but that's another story. But yeah, man, I think just trying to be present and trying to get to a point where you can understand the meaningful conversations you're having at the time so that you don't regret it later on in life.
100%. Right? Yeah, 100%.
Amazing, man. Look, I've absolutely loved this conversation, and I would love to carry it on. But from a timing standpoint, I want to start to wrap it up. Talk to me about what's next for the Liana collection. I'd love for our listeners, if they could reach out to you, where can they find you? And then we've got one last question that we're now asking everybody.
Okay. Yes, I look for that. For us, we've obviously just won UK Spirits Distributor of the Year. Our goal moving forward is, you know, continuing the growth of the company and really delivering for our brands. You know, I think the market out there today is crying out for really, really interesting founder-led, sustainable and independent brands. And yeah, if there's any buyers out there that are interested in, you know, ciders or Calvados or, you know, organic vermouths, liqueurs, and wants to have a chat about us and about what we do, and, you know, wants to connect with the brand founders, then it would be great to be connected with a few guys out there.
Amazing. I want to drink now, man.
Cancel the next podcast.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
But look, thank you so much, H. Yeah, I think there's one more?
One more question. So where can people find you? LinkedIn, is that the best place if they want to reach out
LinkedIn
for a bit of advice? Or
lianacollection.co.uk.
Nice, great.
One thing we have got is a series of events that are coming at the back end of this year around kind of live music, the spirits, meeting the founders.
Love
I can't
it.
Go into too much more detail than that, but
I love the sound of that. Festival vibes.
Quite aggressively promoting that.
That doesn't surprise me. Are you going to be playing?
I can't say it.
Oh, Woodsy is a wonderful guitar player.
And you're on drums, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about that, amazing, mate. So yeah, okay. So the last question is, for every guest we've had on this series, we're asking them, and you're number two in the recording process, but we are asking them to fill a dinner party for us. Okay. So what I want you to think about is you are coming for dinner and you got to bring a guest. Tell me why. It can be anyone. Come tell me who it is and then why. Already, Stu from Money Life has chosen Gary Neville. So we currently Stu, the founder of Money Life. We have David Wood, the founder of Liana Collection. We have Harry Turpin, founder of Savoris. We have Chloe Wakefield, who works at Savoris. And then we have Gary Neville. Who are you? Who are you going to add to this wonderfully eclectic mix of people? And why?
For God's sake. I was going to like pick a famous golfer, like, you know, old school John Daly, the Maverick, but I don't know if you guys would get on, just thinking about the dynamic of the group. And also you asked me this question. I haven't had time to think about it. I did read a good book recently, which was Phil Knight.
Yeah.
Who's the founder of Nike.
Yeah. Shoe Dog. Yeah. Nice.
And he was a really interesting, his story is like amazing, but he was also... He wasn't just like a business guy. He had a really, really dynamic and interesting personality. to go alongside it. And if you haven't read that book, it's really cool.
Yeah.
I think he'd have a lot to
talk to you guys about. That's amazing. Yeah. We're gonna have such a good list.
I'm sure that he must have sponsored Gary Neville on the way as well. So they probably already know each other.
Can you imagine if we get to like 12, 13 episodes, we have this like unbelievably A-list guest list. Can you imagine if we actually made it happen?
You would bring them all in.
And then I serve them my like homemade spag bowl. Like spag bolognese. They all leave. Unbelievable. David, mate, thank you so much for coming on Told. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful to have a chat. And thanks so much.
Cheers, H. Thanks for having me. And thank you so much. Good luck with everything for the future. And
I'll see you
in the pub in about 20 minutes.
That's it. It's all about the pub. Guys, thanks so much for giving me your ears, giving us a little bit of time and listening to our dulcet tones. It is very much appreciated. Please do subscribe, download, share with your mates, share with your mates' mates' mum. If you liked us, we're Untold Podcast. If you didn't like us, we are Hungry Podcast, run by Dan Pope. He listens to this and he's a good friend of mine and he knows I'm joking. Guys, thanks so much. We'll see you next time. Ta-da. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friend's mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jiggling.